Now, there are treaties or agreements on a lot of matters that impact society, and they address things like poverty, patents, environmental issues. But one of the more interesting treaties has been the Outer Space Treaty, created in 1967, regulating space exploration. It's 50 years old. Is it overdue for an update? Well, Stephen Friedland is the Professor of International Law at Western Sydney University. Stephen, a very good morning to you.
Oh, good morning, Nick. How are you?
Now, before we talk about whether we think it's time to update the space treaty, just give us a bit of a potted history, if you can. How did it come about, and what does it actually regulate?
Oh, that's a great question. Well, humans sent a human-made object into space orbit already in 1957, and immediately then it was recognised that space is an incredibly strategic area. And is used for military purposes. It's ultimately used for communications and a whole range of other things. If you think about your daily life, for example, you use space technology maybe 20 or 30 times a day without even thinking about it. So yeah. Space is incredibly important. And even in those early days, and we were in the midst of the Cold War when all of that happened, it was recognized that rules were required in terms of the way we utilize space. Otherwise, of course, the unthinkable might happen, that people might start to try to colonize space. You might have wars in space. And then ultimately, as space became more commercialized, it was important also to regulate that, because space is a multi-billion dollar industry. And as I say, it's so important and strategic for us that we really need rules around everything that we do in space. So it's not just exploration. It's the way we use space in a whole range of different ways.
Now, you definitely think it needs to be updated. Is this just a matter of keeping pace with the change of technology, or is it a deeper update that's required?
Well, it's related to that. So lawmaking at any level usually works at glacial speed, and at this international level, because the rules that regulate the way we use space, by and large, are made at the UN level, and that moves very slowly for a whole range of reasons, some of them legitimate and some of them are, if you like, political. But in terms of technology, the technology that has allowed us to do things in space has moved so quickly, and we're doing things now that were beyond the contemplation of us even 10 years ago, let alone 50 years ago. So as the technology ratchets up, allowing us to do a whole range of things in space, we have this wonderful treaty, and it really is a great treaty that sets out really important framework principles. But of course, we're doing so much more in space now that sometimes the general framework principles, as important as they are, don't necessarily cover every aspect of a specific activity. And that's where we might run into difficulty if we don't supplement this treaty, not replace it, but supplement it with additional rules and principles that take account of the way we've moved forward.
I would have imagined too that at the time, certainly back in 1967, there would have been very little idea that maybe private companies and private individuals would have a role to play when it came to space exploration.
That's a great observation. Obviously, at the time in the 50s and 60s, the development of space technology was really by the two main superpowers of the time, the USSR and the USA. They were both developing it really with military eyes in mind, although a lot of those technologies subsequently were used for civil and commercial purposes as well. But yes, you're right. All space activity in those early days were carried out by the state itself, by the country itself. But even in this treaty, even as far back as 1967, in the terms of the treaty, it was contemplated, although not expected, but it was contemplated that space activities would be undertaken by non-governmental entities. And, of course, that has been the case. So space is highly commercialized now, although it is true to say still that a lot of countries still engage in government activities in space, but as you know, there are many, many commercial activities that go on as well. So the treaty covers that because it says even if there are private activities, even if there are activities carried out by non-governmental entities, Essentially, if something goes wrong, if there's a collision or whatever, the responsibility lies with the underlying country that where that private entity is associated with. So it's covered and was contemplated, but of course the commercialization of space has gone through exponential growth.
Stephen, what do you see as the risks associated with not updating the treaty?
Well, I think the risks are manifold because we use space so much and because we're all dependent on it. So, for example, if we had a day without space, that would be a disaster in so many ways for economies like Australia, but also for less developed countries as well. So the risks are that we're not controlling necessarily every aspect of what we're doing. The main risks we have, for example, are in the area of space debris. Your listeners would be aware that every day the amount, the number of pieces of debris and junk that are in space, and they essentially stay there, moving at 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 kilometres an hour, is increasing. And whilst, of course, space is a big place, the possibilities of a collision, or we call them conjunctions, the possibility of a conjunction between a satellite and a piece of junk or whatever increases every day, although the risks are still quite minimal. But as we put more and more things in space, and as we contemplate also putting humans in space to a much larger degree than we are now, those risks need to be managed. And frankly, it's a really difficult exercise to manage the issues of space debris. So that's one great risk. Another great risk is the military uses of space. Now, space has been used for military purposes for a long, long time. So using space technology to help conduct warfare on Earth, that has happened essentially since about the 1980s, 1990s, in a significant way, and has grown. But the real risks are at some point, because space is so important to so many countries, that we might even see the theatre of warfare moving to space itself. And so we need rules, very, very significant rules, to address that. And of course, that is very difficult, because that, of course, is such a political area, and countries find it very difficult to agree. So we have major challenges, but we also have major opportunities. But of course, we have to manage the challenges so we can properly utilize space for all of our benefits, because space has allowed humanity to move forward in so many positive ways, notwithstanding that there are these, if you like, difficult areas that we still have to address.
Just quickly, Stephen, does Australia have a role to play in this review process?
Oh, I think that's a great question as well. So Australia, we're a member of the UN committees. We've been involved in all of the discussions. I've had the privilege on a number of occasions actually representing Australia at these UN meetings. We also have domestic space law, which was put together in 1998, and we have a domestic space industry. Now, the industry is growing. The law hasn't changed, the domestic law, and so the government, as we speak, is undergoing a review process of that law, because so much has changed even since 1998, when the Australian law came together, and I was appointed by the government to help them in the review of the Australian laws, and that process is an ongoing thing. So Australia has a role to play. We are an actor in space. We're not a major space power, but space is important for us, and we have some unique requirements because, for example, we have a huge coastline. We need monitoring of that from satellite technology, et cetera, but there are many other areas. So Australia has a significant role to play, but it's also important for Australia itself to continue to develop its own industry for us to remain competitive with other countries because, as I said, space is so integral to the growth of economies and communities and the way we utilise and grow and develop our industries. So Australia has a role to play to help with the lawmaking and help in the regulation, but also Australia has a role to play for itself in growing a responsible and viable space industry even more so that we as a country can grow in ways that we want to.
Stephen, we will have to leave it there, but thank you so much for your time this morning.
You're welcome, Nick. It's nice to talk to you. All the best.
Thank you. That was Stephen Freeland, Dean of the School of Law and Professor of International Law at Western Sydney University, talking about the Outer Space Treaty, 1967, 50 years old, and the desperate need, in his view, for an update.